And I'm reading that title to you because this is my, hopefully my one typo at the top there. That truncated it a bit. I have no disclosures. In the last 5 years, we've seen a marked increase in the number of women electing to get some form of prenatal genetic testing, including traditional karyotyping and microarray. Chromosomal microarrays use high-resolution whole genome screening to identify chromosomal aneuploidy, base pair variation, and for measuring gains and losses of DNA in the human genome. It's considered a first-tier test for the genetic evaluation of fetal anomaly during childbirth, and in infants and children with unexplained intellectual disabilities, and that includes autism spectrum disorders and congenital anomalies. In a recent study by Wapner in 2012 of over 3,000 women using prenatal CMA, 0.9% were found to have a copy number variant, or CNV, that was known to be pathogenic. 1.8% possessed one that was benign, and 1.6%, or 48 women, had a variant of unknown significance, often called a VU. Positive results that have variable outcomes, like a variant on the autism spectrum, or a de novo variant with unknown function, can cause anxiety in prospective parents, and this also precipitates the need to gather as much information as possible so decisions can be made to decide whether to keep or terminate a pregnancy. We define biomedical expert knowledge here as knowledge from clinicians, such as doctors, genetic counselors, scholarly literature such as medical internet databases and journals, and general knowledge generated from within and broadly accepted throughout a Western biomedical paradigm. Although BEK arises from and is deeply embedded within cultural contexts, domain or lay ways of knowing are often ways that generate BEK. There's a separation between the two of these, where BEK becomes empirically legitimated, objectively validated. And conversely, when we say that BEK is expert knowledge, other ways of knowing, such as embodied, folk, or cultural knowledge, become non-expert or sometimes backward. The first moment that a patient receives their prenatal microarray results is given to them from a clinician in a biomedical setting, and thus, this research starts with patients first encountering BEK as they receive microarray results. The new genetics gives prospective parents the opportunity to interrogate the genome beyond our understanding to interpret findings within the biomedical paradigm, as is the result with the case of a VU. Patients who are faced with the critical decision of keeping or terminating a pregnancy in the absence of BEK with something like a VU or a positive result with an unknown effect must find other authoritative voices to augment understanding. So this is the space where other forms of knowing really gain authority. Our aims in this study are to investigate knowledge sources within and beyond the biomedical domain that prospective parents utilize to understand and manage prenatal microarray results associated with varying degrees of uncertainty. The University of Pennsylvania collaborated with Columbia University on this study. We recruited women from prenatal testing facilities via pamphlets provided after receiving results from microarray testing. The pamphlet invited any woman who had received prenatal testing results in the last 4 to 6 weeks to participate in a short online survey. Provided on the left is a sample of some of the questions on that survey, and I'm happy to go into that in greater detail after all of the talks. These surveys revealed that of 156 patients, 36 women had received an abnormal result or a result of uncertain significance. 27 of these women and 12 of their partners were then contacted for interviews with the research team. The interviews were de-identified, transcribed verbatim, and analyzed in vivo. Participants were compensated for their time with a $25 Amazon gift card. We analyzed interviews using a grounded theory approach that identified codes in vivo and used focused coding for items such as certainty and uncertainty. Specific attention was paid to identifying participants' interface with informational resources. And the research team actually met regularly to generate a working codebook. And we come from various backgrounds, including anthropology, medical genetics, and genetic counseling. Women ranged in age from 20 to 43, and men from 29 to 46, with the majority of both sexes in the 31 to 40-year-old bracket. Nearly all participants identified as white, college-educated, and the majority, 64%, acknowledged a religious affiliation, predominantly Catholic or Jewish. Of the 27 women that were included in the study, 3 reported receiving a laboratory-diagnosed pathogenic result, and 24 had a variant of uncertain significance. Within the VU subgroup, 1 woman reported a likely pathogenic result, 12 had uncertain results, 9 were likely benign, and 2 were not available. Of the 24 receiving a VU, 4 reported that the result was de novo, 13 were inherited, and 6 patients were unsure. 1 additional case included both a de novo and an inherited result. 3 patients elected to terminate the pregnancy, including 1 patient who had a selective reduction of a multiple pregnancy. For these findings, I'm just going to note that the end of the quote has either an M or a W that signifies man or woman. We found that BEK was considered helpful if it positioned participants to make decisions. As one woman says, the doctor's a little better because you think it's somebody that has some knowledge instead of Googling it. Patients sought provider recommendations first. Another woman recalls, once we announced what our decision was, it seemed like everyone just agreed with us all at the same time. I mean, they were all like, whew, we're so glad. Okay, we're so glad. Further testing and BEK helped to relieve anxiety and facilitate decisions. A man says, we got another ultrasound done, and then we sat with a doctor and a counselor, and that was very helpful. That, I think, more than the research on my end, kind of gave us closure and gave us the information that we needed to make a decision. Participants tended to accept BEK when it resolved their situational uncertainty and led to a decision, but then would move into other ways of exploring their own independently accrued BEK information and incorporating other ways of knowing to arrive at a decision. Internet resources provided by clinicians gave participants a suite of resources they could access on their own time. However, most patients expressed frustration that they did not receive as much of this information as they would have liked. Many participants felt that they could have handled complex literature and online material of a technical nature, and they often cited their education or career backgrounds in legitimating their ability to close that informational gap between what they wanted to know and what would allow them to best make decisions. If participants did find helpful information online that hadn't first been presented to them by a provider, it undermined trust in provider knowledge and BEK. A man says, I did not feel comfortable that a specialist, a geneticist, didn't have answers for us, but yet my wife could answer them just from the little research that she did, and that's not her profession. That kind of irked me, that they conducted this testing but couldn't really help us with it, the answers. Finally, while some information alleviated distress if it was helpful, information that didn't resolve uncertainty could create additional confusion and become toxic knowledge. As one man says, we did a little bit of research online, but when you look online, it's just nonsense. I mean, some are true, some are false. Participants utilized multiple sources outside the biomedical sphere to generate an expert knowledge base in the absence of biomedical certainty. This knowledge base is considered expert as, from a constructivist perspective, all knowledge is useful simply because it's being used, whether or not it's biomedically validated. The organic groupings for these other ways of knowing were embodied knowledge, spiritual knowledge, and social network. However, one caveat to grouping alternate ways of knowing is that they're subjective, variable, context-specific, and of course, hard to quantify. Some patients referred to an instinctual, embodied knowledge of what decision they needed to make in their pregnancy. Others talked about gut instinct, and this was a recurrent theme among our participants and a powerful part of knowledge that increased decisional certainty, most noticeably for 2 couples who decided to terminate the pregnancy. The gut informed decisions of what needed to be done. These 2 quotes exemplify this. One woman remembers, I'm the pregnant one. When I feel it moving, I can feel it growing. I just feel like it's going to be okay. Another one says, they said it, the physical abnormality, could be corrected, but there has been other cases. But I don't know, something in my gut was, let it go. Religious and spiritual beliefs exerted a strong influence on a minority of participants and were used to validate decisions that had already been made, but not to directly make a decision. In one case, a partner experienced emotional turmoil as he struggled to reconcile a pathogenic genetic result and possible abortion with the tenets of his religion. He reflects, I'm Catholic, and part of my main struggle with this was that if abortion, it was against my religious upbringing, regardless of the condition. Now, I've since changed my values and beliefs and core values on that. I kind of felt, doesn't this child deserve a chance? And the fact that the doctor brought up examples of pastors he knows that have written books and essays, and his stance was that this wasn't a sin. It gave me more peace of mind. The experiences of other parents inform decisions based on perceptions of raising children with developmental disabilities and how this could potentially impact quality of life for the unborn child and affect participants' future experiences as parents. One woman says, "My sister-in-law's friend is caring for this child that has some serious medical needs. Thank God they have the resources for that, and we just don't, and that was not something that we wanted to undertake." Informal online support groups not directly sanctioned through clinicians, such as Unique and Facebook groups, alleviated feelings of isolation in prospective parents and provided spaces to share pregnancy experiences and gain social support for decision making. As one woman remembers here, "You see pictures of their kids. Everyone's very friendly and they email each other and tell you what's going on. Like, I still have these people asking me how the pregnancy is going because I told them I wasn't sure I was going to continue. In the published reports, there were 8 pictures of kids, and one of them looks severely mentally retarded, and I was like, I'm out. I'm not going to do that. Then you must go on this Facebook page, and most of these kids look pretty normal." Family medical history forms a natural bridge between BEK and other ways of knowing, as it's a composite of shared stories of health between genetic relatives that traces its origins to and gains biomedically recognized legitimacy from BEK. This woman says, "Psychosis runs in my husband's family, so it's pretty obvious to me that the genetic disease runs in the family, and so that influenced my decision to terminate, because I know what it looks like, and it looks horrible. My husband's aunt is in a psychiatric hospital, unable to make sense of her world. She can't connect to another human being. We've just seen so much evidence, I don't know how to describe to you how clear our decision was. It wasn't like, should we terminate?" Participants accrued knowledge through oral histories of family medical conditions and health states at the suggestion of providers while conducting additional genetic testing to help resolve uncertainty about their unborn children, themselves, and their family. Family history is unique in our study because it's a patient-derived way of informing knowledge by BEK-derived sources. One woman says, "It was nerve-wracking choosing to keep that boy because the doctor had said they thought it would be easier to keep the girl, even though it was abnormal, but it was abnormal like my husband." So moving on here, I'm going to try to wrap this up quickly. Our main findings were that ambiguous microarray results with uncertain outcomes cause a crisis that patients seek to resolve by gathering multiple types of knowledge, and that BEK is consulted first. After this, other ways of knowing are used. Participant-directed research informs decisions and undermines trust in clinicians and BEK. Family medical history and genetic testing of relatives and parents formed an additional line of decisional support that borrows from BEK and other ways of knowing. Here we call other ways of knowing cultural expert knowledge, or CEK, as it more holistically encompasses the multiple types of knowledge participants access outside of BEK. Previous studies have considered other embodied experiential knowledge or religious and spiritual beliefs in studies of pregnancy and genetic testing, but this doesn't account for the full breadth of informational sources that participants drew from to make decisions. Using the term expert knowledge also creates a false dichotomy where everything else, such as lay or experiential knowledge, becomes non-expert by default. For some participants, significantly, CEK was the only knowledge available to make a decision after receiving a VU. CEK has multiple benefits. It allows patients to generate knowledge in a discourse with others, take ownership of their bodies, question the absence of biomedical knowledge, facilitate the creation and dissemination of pregnancy and parenthood knowledge through narratives and story sharing, and encourages the generation and production of knowledge. As I mentioned before, it's very hard to quantify and utilize in biomedical settings. Sociodemographic variables can influence whether someone with information needs will actually seek the information. Our demographic is overwhelmingly white, well-educated, and heterosexual, with extensive graduate or professional education, so our outcomes may not represent those found in other contexts. Our participants sought as much information as possible to inform decisions. Informational needs in patients and their partners should be considered prior to the start of prenatal genetic testing. This could include sensitive discussions specific to participants regarding health literacy, values and beliefs, social networks, and family history. Participants in this study desired an expanded array of informational resources from clinicians. This included medical literature and links to support groups and reputable websites. Expanding this array of information available to participants may alleviate anxiety and feelings of helplessness in the face of uncertainty. Considering CEK as complementary to BEK in clinical care of patients undergoing microarray testing, particularly if results are VU or positive but on a spectrum of unknown severity, can help develop fully informed patients who possess greater genomic health literacy. This narrows the information gap between what we find with genetic testing and what patients can actually do with those results. The recognition of CEK as a legitimate source of expert knowledge by clinicians and other biomedical professionals can buoy participants' decisional confidence and their understanding of results by providing them with support and knowledge from multiple sources. This support can in turn facilitate participants' integration of total information, including locally specific values and beliefs, in order to make the most maximally informed decisions that are possible with the current understanding of prenatal microarray genomic results. And with that, I'd like to acknowledge the research team, Allison Werner-Lynn, Fran Barg, Barbara Bernhardt, Katie Kellum, and Sarah Walser made contributions to data collection in the preparation of the presentation. Our collaborators at Columbia University, especially Ronald Wapner, Anamita Russell, and of course all of our research participants. And I have references here if anybody wants further reading. And thank you very much.